You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
October 27th, 2018. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me at republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will visit and subscribe to spingola.net, screeningsandyhook.net, and woolliesblog.net. blogspot.com. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Please visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. View our past, current, and future guest lineup at spingola.com. You will find the schedule all the way back to October 23rd, 2010, the day I began broadcasting on RBN. My first guest today is Daniel Estulin, E-S-T-U-L-I-N. His website is english.danielestulin.com. Daniel Estulin is an award-winning investigative journalist, international best-selling author, researcher, public speaker, senior political analyst, film director, producer, and foreign policy advisor to the Joint Chiefs of Staff to Latin American nations and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation. His international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, has sold 7.2 million copies in 68 countries and has been translated into 42 languages. He is the first man to publicly expose the shadowy cabal of some of the world's most powerful mind manipulators. His 2015 Nobel Peace Prize nomination serves as a tribute and recognition for all the work in fighting, exposing, and risking his life for the common good of the human race. In December 2015 and again in 2016, he won Mexico's highest award for journalism. Between 2012 and 2014, he presented and directed the highest rated Spanish language TV show in the world on Russia Television's international channel with a weekly audience of over 6 million per episode. In 2017, he traveled to 15 countries and 4 continents to participate in over 80 conferences devoted to international geopolitics. Since 2005, he has spoken at over 700 conferences attended by more than 500,000 people. He is a former counterintelligence colonel in the Russian military, who worked with Vladimir Putin directly. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I must admit that prior to reading your book, my vote in 2016 was a vote against Hillary Clinton. And after reading your book, I have a totally different outlook on what is going on. Your book is amazing. I think it's a must read by everyone.
And out of curiosity, how did your outlook change before reading my book and after reading my book?
Well, I thought that we are all programmed by what we hear in the media. And we hear nothing but negative in the media. No matter what channel you're watching, no matter what you're seeing, it's all very negative. And even if you try to be a critical thinker, that is going to impact the way you think about certain people. I thought that he was arrogant. And of course you only hear the negative things. There's nothing, you never hear anything good. But after reading your book, where you compare him to JFK, it dawned on me what he was attempting to do. And there are things that he has done that I really appreciate, such as the trade agreements and really increasing productivity in this country. Those are good things. And one of the statements you make in your book, excuse me, is that you felt that he compares the country with one of his buildings. And all of his buildings are very secure. And he's looking at our country in the same way, that we must make it very secure and a safe place. And I thought that was very interesting. Comment and perception. Well, your whole book is just amazing. As I said, I think that everybody should read it. It would totally change their minds. At least it did mine.
Well, thank you so much. Before we start, maybe it's a very unconventional way to start an interview, an interviewee asking an interviewer for her opinion on the book. But anyway, I think it's important for people to understand who are listening to this interview. That the typical question, right? So are you pro-Trump? Are you against Trump? I cannot be pro or against Donald Trump because I'm not an American. I look at Donald Trump as a paleontologist would look at a dinosaur. I touch him, I smell him, I examine him under the microscope. I look at all the things he've done. I put it in perspective against the backdrop of what's going on in the world, especially economically speaking. And then I make a decision about what he is, but not a pro or against, because again, I'm not American. I look at him as, is he good for what's coming next as far as the world is concerned and as far as my country, Russia, is concerned? And then I realize that had it been anyone else, such as Hillary Clinton, for example, would have been in the midst of third thermonuclear war. So thank God Donald Trump is president of the United States.
I agree with you. Totally. And it was your book that pushed me towards that new perception of him.
I'm glad.
So am I. I have a hard copy of your book, and prior to getting the hard copy, I purchased the Kindle copy, and it is so marked up. I've highlighted so many passages in the book. And it's a remarkable book. And I think everybody, every American certainly should read it. And
you know the difference between this book and all the other stuff out there? Because there's a lot of stuff. You have the Woodward book. You have, I can't remember these other people's names who wrote these salacious things about what Donald Trump did in a Russian hotel room with whoever these, women of questionable character were. It's absolutely irrelevant as far as the world geopolitical situation is concerned. Is he rude? Yes. Is he bad-mannered? Yes. Does he not know how to eat properly using a fork and a knife? Yes. And so many other yeses. But again, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that the economic model, which was created back in 1944 as a result of the Bretton Woods Conference by the winners of World War II, is now in a stage of collapse. And Donald Trump is the consequence of the collapse of this model, which I'm sure we'll get into this in the interview. But what this book does, it's a roadmap for people to understand who the players, real players. Because the presidents, prime ministers, be it Hillary Clinton, be it Justin Trudeau, be it Theresa May, these people, they're the visible part of the invisible spectrum, those who control the geopolitical situation from behind the scenes on the supranational level. And I think people who listen to radio such as yours are in a position to understand that what you hear, as you said earlier, in the mainstream publication has very little to do with reality.
And let's emphasize that the title of your book is In the Shadows of a Presidency, so that people know what to buy. We've been talking about the book, but I failed to mention its
title. In the Shadows of the Presidency by Daniel Estrin. That's right.
Yes. Fabulous book. Fabulous.
Thank you.
And you cover so many things. And everything that you said, yes, he's rude. He's... And I think that that is what a lot of people see. They just see, they don't look at what has happened or what he has done. They just simply look at the negatives and judge by those.
I think this interview will open, yeah, absolutely. They judge him by what they hear in the paper. But because the mainstream publications, I don't care if it's right, if it's center, if it's left, they all have an agenda. Be it left-wing agenda, right-wing agenda, they all have an agenda. But because I am a doctor of conceptual intelligence, I take this way beyond what the media will tell you and look at it as someone who's been in the counterintelligence for a very, very long time. And I put the pieces together in such a way that it will help people understand, you know, the entire edifice of not only a global economy, but nation states, countries is falling to pieces. And now we're in the post industrial world called global 3.0. And this is going to affect how we see reality, because there's a lot of pieces out there that if people just open their eyes a little bit and see the right things and not where the media wants to take you. You know, there's a reason, for example, when you have a magic show, you have a magician, magicians always bring this beautiful woman with them. Have you ever asked yourself why?
Yes. Well, just as a distraction, obviously.
It's a distraction because the sleight of hand works if you're looking at the beautiful woman. Okay? instead of focusing on the magician. And that's what the media does so well. The left-right dialectic works, and not only in the United States or Western Europe, it works universally. But because the entire edifice of the construct of world media, mainstream media, is very powerful in the West and its effects because it's been perfected. Okay. And it basically controlled the dialectic the world over. It doesn't matter whether it's Russia, doesn't matter whether it's China, it's Africa, Middle East. It doesn't really make a difference. The point is that Google and all these, Silicon Valley corporations, they're all run from the United States. So you get a dialectic. And what we're doing in this book, we're helping people focus on the important things, and we're making them think, and we're showing them how to do it. Let me just give you one example before we get into this. A lot of people right now are talking about oil. I'm going to give even a simpler example. Everybody's saying, well, Donald Trump is an insane president because he's picking fights with our best friends, such as Canada, NATO, Western Europe, be it Germany, be it France, be it England. He sits down with the general director of North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, and he immediately starts criticizing them. He's criticizing World Trade Organization. He's going after International Monetary Fund. These are our friends. No, they are not. The Donald Trump is the alternative model. He's the consequence of this economic collapse we're living through right now. And the economics collapse we're living through right now is based on a model which was put together back in 1944 by the winners of World War II, with dollar and the United States being the emission center of the universe. Meaning that it was based on a model of infinite growth. But you cannot have infinite growth because planet Earth is a globe and it's a closed system. So there's come a point where you come to end of growth, to the limits of growth. And so we've reached that point right now. And what you're seeing right now is the fight for survival between two different models, which can never coexist. And so what Trump is doing when he's fighting Justin Trudeau in Canada, when he's going, when he goes to the G7 meeting or NATO meeting or G20 meeting or to the United Nations and he starts criticizing all his friends. I mean, it was priceless, that photograph from G7. Trump sitting with his hands crossed and everybody is looking at him. If looks could kill, right? But the point is what people have to understand, that the elite, they will do everything in their power to make you take sides. It's like the Dodgers against the Red Sox. So are you like Dodger fan or are you like the Red Sox fan? Because if you're Red Sox fan, you can't be a Dodger fan. Are you the National League fan or the American League fan? Are you pro or against? And this dialectic makes you take sides, but it's not about left-right divide. It's about global construct, which is collapsing around us. And so when Trump is fighting Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, or Angela Merkel, Chris, her for the deals that she has made with Russia, with Europe, with et cetera, or, you know, with China, as far as the trade, we'll get into that later as well. There's no such thing as the trade war. It's nonsense, and I will explain to you a little bit later how and why. But the point is, Trump is picking a fight with all of his enemies, or the enemies who are against the system that he represents, because Canada, Western Europe, NATO, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, World Trade Organizations, especially these last three, they're part of the Bretton Woods. And although Bretton Woods allegedly disappeared back in 1971 with Richard Nixon, it's very much alive and well, although wearing a different mask, because World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, they're constructs of the Bretton Woods system. So all of these international organizations, their model is based on this infinite growth at somebody else's expense. And that model is coming to its end. And that's why Donald Trump is fighting all these people. It's important to understand because, again, if the media is portraying him as this crazy lunatic, you have to ask yourself a question, why are they doing this? Are they purveyors of truth in America? We know that's not the case. So why are they trying to portray Donald Trump in that light? Because again, he is the enemy of the mainstream media, which is part of the global elite. That's why, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Facebooks, Googles, they all attend Bilderberger secretive meetings annually, although none of that ever gets out on the mainstream press, and Donald Trump does not.
Wow. Yes. And it, and you mentioned China and trade. And all one has to do in this country is just drive down any busy street and you can see businesses closing down. Strip malls are empty. The infrastructure is falling apart. And when I was in China in 2007, I saw all of these American companies are well represented there. And of course they've gone there because the labor is cheap. They don't have to have standards, EPA standards. And they can get the cheap labor is what they're wanting.
Let me give you an example about China. You know, let's take a pair of jeans. If Levi's were to make a pair of jeans in the United States, the cost of production with everything included for, let's say, I don't know, jeans cost, I think, about $100, more or less. Okay? The costs of making a pair of Levi's are going to be between $80 and $90. So you basically get a $10 profit. Now, if you do it in China, the cost of production is about $3. So you make $97. That's the difference. But the thing is that under Obama, under the Clintons, under the Bushes, under all these different governments, and again, when we're talking about Trump is the enemy of Hillary Clinton, I'm not talking about the Democrats versus Republican construct. Again, there we are. The media, the government, you know, the deep state is trying to make you take sides. Remember, and I'm sure you do, that the Bushes publicly stated that in the last elections, they voted for Hillary Clinton. Do you remember that?
Yes, which is rather amazing. But
it makes perfect sense.
When you look at NAFTA, and who was promoting NAFTA before it was passed, and then who really pushed it through, which was Clinton. The Bushes and the Clintons were working on NAFTA before it became a law.
Exactly. So the Bushes and the Clintons are on the same team.
Yes.
It's not a Republican-Democratic divide. It's important for people listening to understand. The deep state is making you decide between Republicans and the Democrats. I think we have to go to commercial, though.
Yes, we do. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And our first guest today is Daniel Estulin, and his website is english.danielestulin.com. He is the author of In the Shadows of a Presidency. It is a must-read book, and it is available at Amazon. Go buy one. Go buy a copy. Buy several copies. Give them out as Christmas gifts. Okay. We're talking about China and the price of jeans and the profit that people gain or companies gain when they have cheap labor.
You know, just before the break, we're talking about the North America Free Trade Agreement, which obviously was through by the Bushes and the Clintons. And then so it's important for people to understand that when they're going to vote on November 6th, the vote is not along Democrats versus Republican lines. The vote is liberalist banking financier world order. And that you can include because again, in the last elections, we had Trump against Clinton, but Clinton was just a face of a group. Behind Clinton, you had international financial corporations. You had Wall Street. You had Washington's establishment. You had intelligence agencies. You had the Federal Reserve. You had a Silicon Valley. You had Hollywood, George Soros, the Rockefellers. These are the people behind, and mainstream media, obviously, behind Clinton. And Trump is methodically taking them down one at a time, whether it's the Me Too movement in Hollywood, of the hearings we're seeing in the House and Senate, you know, with the Silicon Valley crowd, the dismantling of the intelligence agencies, Comey and company, thus the Mueller investigation and its, you know, non-sequitur, whether it's the establishment of Washington, the bureaucracy, mainstream media, George Soros, yesterday, I think it was the day after, or the day before yesterday, and I don't know where he was, you know, there was a chant in the room, lock him up, in reference to George Soros. So these are the people who are on the opposite side against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the alternative economic model. Again, it's not the Democrats against the Republicans, because both these parties primarily represent one global model. And that model is liberal banking financier, global control of finances. When I say financiers, Wall Street, we're talking about people who play with numbers on a computer, people who speculate, people who don't produce anything at all, people who don't improve the lives of people on the planet Earth per square kilometer of space against nature. We're talking about people directly responsible for the financial meltdown. And the financial meltdown is now here. And all this other stuff, it's all bread and circus. I don't care what it is, whether it's the Kavanaugh hearings, Stormy Daniels, whole lawyer, some other, you know, silly looking sidekick, some, you know, salacious stories you hear from some of these pseudo journalists, you know, with world name recognition. All that stuff is nonsense, because the backdrop to what we're seeing right now is the fight to the death between a model based on numbers on a computer and pure speculation, which controls now 70% of a global economy and is the cause of $4 quadrillion debt. That's 4 and 15 zeros, in case people are wondering what that number means. Because the meltdown is here. And it's not over by a long shot. You know, you had a 300 or 400 point collapse yesterday. You had a 600 point collapse 3 days ago. You had another 300 point collapse on Monday. Think of this meltdown as stocks playing catch up to economic realities. Those are the economic realities of a slowing global economy, a deflating housing bubble as a result of Federal Reserve rate hikes, trade war with China, Each of these realities had an asset class warning about what was to come. Those asset classes were copper, home building, China stock market, whether we're talking about the loan, the student loan debt, all of it are warnings, red warnings to what is to come. And all of these suggest stocks are going lower, much lower. Remember in the Great Depression when they went down 90%. It's very likely they will do the same now because the bubble is much bigger than it was in 2008, 70% bigger. Except the difference is now we have no instruments to fix it in any way at all. So you have a $4 quadrillion bubble, which somehow needs to be written off. There's a very simple way to write $4 quadrillion. War, World War III. Thermonuclear war, because wars write off debts and responsibilities. And that's why, again, if people start thinking instead of being led by the nose by the media, okay, if you look at the Middle East, what is happening right now between Syria and Israel, okay, this isn't some regional, you know, war between two countries who've been hating each other for the past 2,000 years. These are players in what could very well become a global third world war, which means destruction and dismantling not only of the global economy, but of world's population as we know it. Because again, wars write up debts and responsibilities. Little regional wars can't do that. And that's why so much is being made, actually done, to try to push these people to fight each other on a global scale.
Right. Oh, goodness. All right, we have another quick 3-minute break. We will return. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today, our first guest today, is Daniel Estelin, and his website is english.danielestelin.com. He is the author of In the Shadows of a Presidency. You should immediately buy yourself a copy, read it, buy copies for your family and friends. It's a must read, honestly. It really is. And I don't say that about every book that I read, but this is definitely a must read book. Okay.
We're talking about the financial situation of this collapse that's coming. And in the break, I got a couple of emails from people saying to me that, no, don't worry about it. You're wrong because the Federal Reserve is going to save the system. that was funny. That was my initial reaction as well. So for those who think that the Fed is going to save stocks, let me explain how this works. Okay. And again, I said this throughout 2019, I gave an interview in November 2017 when my book came out in Spain, before it came out in the United States, it came out in Spain, with the third biggest publisher in the world. And in Latin America, it's published by Penguin Random House, just so people don't think it's some wacky conspiracy theory. Although they wouldn't touch my book with a 10-foot pole in the United States, that we do that and they will destroy us. But they have no trouble, they meaning the powers that be, no? But anyways, they have no trouble publishing in Latin America and the book is doing very, very well. But as I said, throughout 2019 and throughout 2017, the Federal Reserve is far more concerned about bonds than stocks. I want to explain this. When stocks collapse, investors lose money. But when bonds collapse, entire countries go broke. And so with that in mind, once the United States bond market began to collapse, basically pushing yields above their long-term trending, you can see the trend lines anywhere online, it became apparent that the Fed would sacrifice stocks to save bonds, which means that the stock market is going to go down about 75, 80, 90%. So all this money people allegedly have that they count on because they have all the stuff in stocks, they're going to lose everything. The reason? Letting stocks collapse will force capital into bonds, thereby forcing yields lower and preventing nations from collapsing. So that process is now officially underway. So if people think that the Federal Reserve is close to stepping in, you are sadly mistaken. For example, I can't remember what it was, 2 days ago or 3 days ago, Cleveland Fed President Helen Mester, she told CNBC that the stock market drop is far from hurting the United States economy. Let's see if people can translate it and understand. So this ties in with Fed Chair Powell's assertion during a recent Q&A. I can't remember. I think it was like a week ago or maybe 10 days ago. I mean, there's so much going on right now that, you know, in today's, what happens in a week, this past week, you know, about 10 or 15 years ago, took about a year to happen. Now everything is so accelerated. So Powell, in this Q&A session, said that the Fed would not step in to prop up the stock market unless it was sustained collapse that was bad enough to impact the real economy, specifically consumer spending. When we're talking about real economy, we're not talking about numbers on a computer screen. In simple terms, the Federal Reserve is not coming to the rescue this time around, and stocks are going to have to drop a lot further before Fed steps in. So, you know, getting to the United States, on the surface, we're hearing all this rah, rah, rah stuff about the American economy, it's overheating, there's so much stuff going on, there's so many jobs, there are more jobs than people. Let's look at the real numbers. Just beneath this veneer, the largest financial bubble of all time is blowing up. Consider that at their peak, the United States tech bubble was $6.6 trillion in size, while the United States housing bubble was $13 trillion in size. American bond market is over $20 trillion in size, and if you include junior debt instruments, it's over $60 trillion in size. And this whole mess is beginning to blow up as the yield on a 10-year U.S. Treasury, which is the single most important bond in the world, has broken out above its multi-decade trending. What I'm trying to say is we are looking at a systemic collapse of an entire world economy. And I don't care what you read in a newspaper. There's 100 million people in the United States who are unemployed between 18 and 65 years of age. You don't believe me? Google 100 million unemployed. You're going to get the numbers. These are the people who are no longer looking for jobs. They're out of the equation, of the market. You're looking at 50 million Americans who survived thanks to coupons and food stamps, exactly. There's another important piece of information that nobody ever talks about. The CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, Misery Index. And that's calculated. It's a very important index. And it's calculated based on real inflation, not the flim-flam you hear about in the newspapers, plus real unemployment. So the CIA Misery Index is real inflation plus real unemployment. Today, it's just under 33 points. As a comparison, the index during the darkest period of the Great Depression was 27. So we are in a state of collapse. The Federal Reserve has $56 billion in cash and $21 trillion in debt. And the Federal Reserve is leveraged at 77-1, and the U.S. debt to GDP is 331%. So if people are wondering what these numbers mean, let's translate it to, you know, household numbers. Imagine you have $56 in a bank, but you owe about, I don't know, $200,000. Okay? Are you going to go to the bank and say, hey, give me some money? I don't think they're going to give it to you. And this is a situation we're looking at right now. They have $56 billion in cash, but they owe $21 trillion. So the situation, the calamity of it all is such that but this is only the United States. This is the world economy we're looking at. $4 quadrillion in debt. Everything is in a bubble. The entire edifice is about to collapse. And that's why you have Canada, United States, Mexico, Latin America, Africa, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, Russia, China, Western Europe, England, you know, Southeast Asia, China, Japan, Middle East. The entire globe is at war with itself. Fiji, I think, is the only place on the map. And maybe, well, Belize actually is bankrupt. Okay, Fiji is the only place on the map where you could say it's relatively peaceful there. Nothing else is going on, but the rest of the world is in a state of collapse.
Wow. And in your book, you demonstrated this when you talked about Russia. And when the collapse happened in Russia, the middle class was virtually eliminated in one day. People who were middle class woke up the day after and they didn't have anything. They didn't have money. They had nothing. All their savings, everything was gone. They went from middle class to poor, severely poor.
40% of Russian citizens in the roaring 90s, as they're called the rape of Russia period by the Clintons and the Bushes, okay, by the elite, because the Clinton and the Bushes, they're the face of the deep state and the supranational elite. 40% of Russian citizens lost everything. What we went through in the 1990s, the United States is going to go through right now, except that Russia or the Soviet Union, we're used to hardships. We're used to living on the edge. We're used to suffering great, great starvation periods. The United States is not. I mean, a lot of people died during the Great Depression. But most people of that period, 99.999%, are no longer alive. So we're looking at something which the American people are not familiar with. But what happened in the Soviet Union in the 1990s, is coming to the United States right now because the system is about to collapse. In the Soviet and Russia, they embezzled everything and basically made good of the assets. It's called, again, the rape of Russia period of the early to mid-1990s. And what you're seeing right now, you know, if you kind of extend it beyond the 1990s, then after that period, because again, what had happened was, you see, in 1944, as I said earlier in the interview, this system was created called Bretton Woods. It was put together by the winners of World War II, okay? And the emission center was obviously the United States, and the United States dollar was the reserve currency. But you had two systems. You had the capitalist Western system, and you had the Soviet socialist system. And between 1944 and 1991, these two systems, they worked fairly well together. In some things, the American system was much better. In other things, such as social justice, the Soviet system, socialist system was better. But in the end, demographically speaking, was more or less the same. Russia was about 300 million people. United States was about 200 something. But, you know, they worked well. And then in 1991, the Soviet Union, it's not that the system collapsed. It's not really the place or the time to go into it. But the two systems merged into this one global, pan-world liberal banking financier system. They merged into this one system. And whether it's between 1944 and 1991, the fight was between a capitalist Western system and socialist Soviet-led system. Beginning in 1991, this entire edifice became one system because the two systems, you know, assimilated, the Western system assimilated the Soviet system. And so now, today, the fight is within Western capitalist system between liberal banking financiers, the people who play with numbers on the computer, on the one hand, and the isolationists or the industrialists, okay, call them whatever you want, okay, who produce something. And Donald Trump is the face of that other group. And again, it's not Republicans against the Democrats. It's transversal because both parties, because again, Trump is fighting not only the Democratic Party, but he's fighting his own party. And Trump has the same problem that Vladimir Putin has in Russia, because both Putin and Trump are right-wing conservatives. And all this talk about Putin being this Soviet pickle-eating, you know, Ruski KGB agent, who kills dissidents in the morning and eats them in the afternoon. It's all utter nonsense. Just like most of the stuff the media spouts about Donald Trump. Trump and Putin are alpha male right-wing conservatives. And Trump the other day, or after their first meeting in Helsinki, said one of his best experiences in life was the meeting he had with Putin. And he was looking forward to the second meeting, and I think it was yesterday, where Bolton officially invited Putin to the United States on behalf of Donald Trump. So again, Trump and Putin, they have the same problem in a sense that both of them, I mean, if they get together, they will have no trouble agreeing on things in 5 minutes because they're alpha males and they're right-wing conservatives. But the problem that both of them have, both are surrounded by traitors. You're seeing it in the United States, leaking left, right, and center, no matter what Trump does, it's in the media half an hour later. Not only in the media, but you have the intelligence agencies all working against Donald Trump. You have a lot of people within the Republican Party working against the interests of Donald Trump or the interest of the alternative isolationist industrialist structure. And Putin has the same problem because the entire edifice of his economic team, from the director of the central bank, think of the director of Russian central bank as the director Powell of the Federal Reserve. She doesn't answer to Putin. She answers to the president of International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde. So they have the same problem because they're both surrounded by traitors. Russia's economy is run by the International Monetary Fund. It's not a surprise that in 2015, Nabibulina, was the president of Russia's central bank, was named a top banker in the world. Why? Because she works directly for the International Monetary Fund. Thus, she's a traitor to Russia as a nation state, as most people who work within the Republican democratic construct in the United States are traitors to the interests of the United States because they don't represent the United States. They represent internationalist, globalist structures based on this dead model of infinite growth on a finite planet. So again, taking this back to the elections, midterm elections, these are the most important elections maybe in the history of the United States, okay? And the reason they're important is because this is one chance America has of truly disbanking the liberal banking financiers, the deep state, the intelligence agencies, all these groups and people who are against the interests of America. And the reason this is the case because up until now, for the last three generations, not only the governments, the people within the government, but think tanks, foundations, universities, whether it's London School of Economics or Wharton School in Business, any of these organizations, the Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, you know, Pinay Circle, all of these organizations, you know, talking heads in the media, et cetera, they're all part. They've been weaned since 44 on this model, which means they know nothing else. But because this model based on infinite expansion is dead, the only way they can survive is taking the world down to hell with them. And this is the only chance because, again, if they win, they're going to do everything in their power to impeach Trump, although Trump hasn't done anything, you know, impeachable. But if they win, they're going to go for it because they must get back to power because they need to get their mission center back, which is printing money. If you and I don't have money, we have nowhere to get it. Maybe borrow it from somebody or go to the bank and beg bank to give us some money. But the government has this printing machine that prints magic money. Remember between 2008 and 2014,
right?
Obama printed $2.5 trillion
yes.
out of thin air in cash. Okay, that money just appeared. And so the monetary volume went from 0.8 trillion to $3.3 trillion. But because they lost power, they don't have the luxury. Because if you look economically, because again, one of the reasons I think you like the book is because, you know, we know that 2 + 2 = 4. Although the media and the liberals and all these other people, they try to tell you that 2 + 2 = 16 apples. And you say, no, it's not. It's 4. But they convince you it's 16.
Right.
And then somebody comes along, me, and says, no, it's 4. And you say, I've always known it was 4. They just screwed with my head. And
yes.
So what I do in this book, I explain things how they are. And the whole thing, again, remember something else. That Donald Trump, I'm going to say something, and people are going to say, what? Donald Trump is the continuation of Barack Obama's second term economic policy. Let me take you through this. In 2008, Barack Obama starts printing money, okay? And he printed $2.5 trillion between aid and
break. Oh, dear. Okay. We have a break. Yeah. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Daniel Estulin. His website, english.danielestulin.com. He is the author of a must-read book titled In the Shadows of a Presidency. And you said, right before the break that Donald Trump is the continuation of Barack Obama's second term economic policy.
And people are probably like, what? That's it. You know, this guy's the enemy of the United States, Eschewin. Let me explain. And as I was saying, so between 2008 and 2014, Obama printed $2.5 trillion. Do you remember the 2010 situation in New York with the president of International Monetary Fund, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and this lady of questionable character, whatever her name was? I don't remember where she was from, some African, you know, deep dark Africa. Well, yeah, you know, there's a story behind it, and I explain it in my book, which nobody really understood. And if you remember Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and if you don't, just, you know, Google it or YouTube it, and you can see there, you know, the look on the face of a member of very powerful European aristocracy sitting in court and not understanding anything. You know, what's going on? How did I get here? Well, the story is very, very simple. When we talked before about the two models, the Western capitalism model and socialist models merging into one. And then in 1991, the West was celebrating the victory of a big bad Brewskis. And then, you know, this celebration lasted less than 10 years, because if you remember in the year 2000, what had happened was the entire system began to crumble with the dot-com bubble. And then in 2008, we had Lehman Brothers collapse. And so these But capitalist model based on infinite growth was collapsing, and bankers obviously understood it very, very well. And they were only able to avoid total collapse in 2008 because they printed an unlimited amount of cash, which had to go somewhere. And so what happened was in 2010, okay, it was already agreed on between the traitorous liberal banking financiers in the United States and the international banking cartel based in Europe, that, because again, the international bankers, they have control of emission centers in Europe and everywhere else in the world, for the exception of the United States. Again, the emission center is a place that prints money. And what they wanted and needed to have to survive is to get a hold of and control the Federal Reserve of the United States. And that was agreed in internal communications, which I discuss and show in my book, that the Federal Reserve and printing of money of American dollars was going to come under the control of Bank of International Settlement, which is central bank of central banks. And the whole thing was already agreed on, and wasn't only agreed by the European aristocracy. It was agreed on by the European aristocracy and American liberal banking financiers. Because all these people, they're not, like, for example, the Rockefellers or Soros, he may have an American passport, but he's not American. Rockefeller may not have an American passport. Well, he's dead, but neither one, he was alive, but his offsprings. They're not American. They're pan-globalists.
Right.
And so the whole thing, they needed to control the emission center, which is the U.S. dollar. And Barack Obama, by putting Dominique Strauss-Kahn on trial, and because the whole thing with this lady was questionable character, okay, it was a scam put together by Obama and his people to show the people that it needed to be shown that they were not going to control the American dollar.
Okay. All righty. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back with more wonderful truths from our guest, Daniel Estulin. Be right back.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our first guest today is Daniel Estulin. His website is English.com. DanielEstulin.com. com. He is the author of In the Shadows of a Presidency, a wonderful, wonderful book. It needs to be read by every American. All righty. So this was a time when
was in 2010 when they put the Dominique Strauss-Kahn on trial, and of course they let him go and et cetera, and the whole thing just went away. But it didn't go away for the international bankers, because they understood that Obama wasn't going to let the emission center, meaning the dollar, be taken over by the globalists. And then in 2011, Obama, for the first time since Reaganomics in 81, fired all from his economic council, all of the internationalists, meaning members of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. And again, people go and go online and see all these things. And then in 2012, if you remember 2012, he changed his economic policy. In 2014, we had, he stopped quantitative easing. And then in 2016, we have Donald Trump and Brexit. So again, Donald Trump is the continuation of Barack Obama's second-term economic policy. And what's interesting about this whole thing, because again, in 2008, this system imploded. And the 2008 crisis was a twin of the pre-war Great Depression that began with the U.S. stock market collapse in October 29. And then in spring 1930, there was a deflation shock. So the crisis itself commenced in 1930. We're seeing it right now. It's about to commence, and it's going to be a lot worse than what happened in the Great Depression. Further on, unlike the 1930 crisis, United States monetary authorities, mainly the Federal Reserve, for the first time openly started an issue of money not supported by any assets at all, which is all this printing of money. But one of the things I always ask Western economists is, please explain to me, how is it that if Venezuela prints $2.5 trillion, you have this 100,000 quadrillion, you know, percent inflation. And when the United States printed $2.5 trillion out of thin air, there was no inflation at all. And they can't explain it, but it's very, very easy. Because although the money supply went from 0.8 to 3.3 trillion, meaning that it increased by a factor of four, there was another thing called the credit multiplier. It dropped by a factor of four between 2008 and 2014, from about 17 to four. And then in 2014, Obama stopped the printing presses. Why did he do that? Because a fall of the credit multiplier to less than four kickstarts a process called non-payment crisis, which is what exactly happened in Russia in 1998. When the credit multiplier went down to 1.2 and the entire system collapsed and Russia defaulted. And so Trump, Obama was between a rock and a hard place. He couldn't print more money because the credit multiplier would have gone under 4 points, which have meant the start of this process called non-payment crisis. And this is the reason why they stopped the printing presses. Then Trump came in and he started them again, but only for the United States. And so we're seeing again, as I said before, in 2012, after Barack Obama won the elections, and in early 2013, for the first time in 35 or 36 years since the beginning of Reaganomics, he eliminated all of the representatives of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan from his economic council. So when people are saying that Obama is very different from Donald Trump, they simply don't understand how economy works. And what you're seeing right now, okay, for the first time, is these two alternative groups who could never ever agree because they represent completely different models, okay, fighting for survival. And that's why, again, the midterm elections on the 6th of November are so utterly important. And it's not about Republicans and Democrats. It's not about Donald Trump, the person, or his, you know, table manners. The fact that, you know, if there's rain, he doesn't hold, you know, his umbrella, you know, his wife, whatever her name is, which I don't really care about. The point is, if you look at the big picture from a conceptual point of view, okay, this is a very different election, just as the 2016 election was very different from all other previous elections, because for the first time in many decades, the contenders represented two completely divergent models rather than slightly varying versions of the same economic models, right, as has always been with the back between, you know, whether it's the Bushes, the Clintons, the whoever, you know, ran for representation on both the Republican and Democratic tickets.
Right. I think it's very interesting, too, and you point this out in your book, what happens to the people who are suddenly driven into poverty. And we saw it in Mexico when the peso was totally wiped out in 96, that people get poor and they resort to drugs and criminal activity. And that happened in Russia. It also, it has happened here in certain communities, where they don't have the opportunities. And I think, to make a division. They've set up a situation in America where they have created a division that can fight against each other, and it keeps people's minds off of what's going on, what is really going on. The other thing that I find very interesting is the destruction of the people that are or were close to Donald Trump in that, you know, the so-called investigations, and they came up with Manafort and I don't know how much time he has to serve, but this was irrelevant. But they were just trying to take down the people who supported him and were close to him, correct?
We are looking at Civil War II in America, and this isn't now. We're in the midst of Civil War, just like we're in the midst of World War III. And this isn't Daniel Estulin saying this. Pope Francis said this in September 2014. Jacob Rothschild said this 3.5 years ago. These are people who are well informed of the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the midst already, as we speak, of World War III. It's not hot war, not yet globally. It's regionally hot war,
mm-hmm.
but globally it is not. And the United States, again, it is exactly the same thing. Because again, think of it this way. Any government on the planet can be defined as fight for power. So the elite of the Western global project find themselves in a very difficult predicament. You know, true, as I said before, they have dominated the world for decades, precisely since 1944 in the Bretton Woods Conference. And I know that, you know, I'm getting like emails from people saying, what is Bretton Woods? Again, it's a conference which was put together by people who won World War II on the way that the world was going to be organized post-World War II globally. Well, the United States, obviously, you know, being front and center of the entire thing, and was based on the expansion and control of global currency via U.S. dollar being the reserve currency. So these people, this Western global project initiatives, they, you know, or nisheis, they have this enormous financial and human resources at their disposal, because again, it's the entire FS, the government, the corporations, the media, the, you know, the cartel, the intelligence agencies, think tanks, foundations, you know, TV talking heads, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? They control the entire edifice of bureaucracy, controlled by the liberal banking financiers. And again, when I say liberals, people are saying like, well, you know, what's a liberal? If democracy is control of the system by the Democrats, liberalism is control of the system by the bankers. Okay. And I think that pretty much, you know, in a nutshell explains
right.
everything. So right. everything controlled by the bankers, call it liberalism. Okay. Basically, it's complete shirking one's responsibility. Something didn't go well. We just wash our hands. Our government give us money. We blew, you know, quadrillion dollars.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, print some more. But the problem today is that these elite circles, they came to power and backed it within the framework of partially explicit and also partially implicit treaty that all empires always include with its constituent parts. And this agreement in our case is very, very simple. I think people will like the analogy. You give us control over your finances, and we in return give you additional income and economic growth. And people were happy as long as they were getting food and, you know, trinkets and you know, gadgets
sure.
such as smartphones, etc. So, you know, people may wonder, why would a nation, a country, give these supranational or supranational liberal banking financier structures a large chunk of the income that, you know, they're generating? And the answer, I'm going to give you a boxing analogy. You know who Don King is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, there's a famous story of boxing promoter Don King. You know, fighters are always complaining about him, that he robbed his clients. He forced them to sign unfathomably, you know,
right.
bad contracts and behaved in an atrocious and trusty manner. I mean, I'm not, to speak of his very questionable hairdo. But almost everyone wanted to deal with him, right? Yes. Why? Because 10% of an $80 million purse is substantially more than 50% of an $8 million purse. Okay? So the same thing here. If you go for a Don King type of deal, meaning that, you know, if you're a boxing promoter, get these two fighters, you steal from them and they know you're stealing from them, but you're giving them 10% of 80 million. It's much better than getting 50% of an $8 million purse with somebody
right.
who's legal, somebody who's honest, because you're getting 4 million and the other guy is rubbing you blind, but you're still getting 8.
Right.
Okay. So it's the same thing when you're looking at it globally from the economics point of view. If you go for a Don King type of deal, in other words, working with international banking, financier, mafia cartels, there's this endless source of cheap investment. There's a flood of customers, the capitalization of assets, sometimes
sure.
hundreds and thousands of times over, which can be borrowed and not returned since you can, you know, you can give them the assets instead of the, you know, the, instead of the money you owe. So for power structures, they in one way or another control budget flows and also the redistribution of property. This is an ideal design. And that's why the world over since 1944, this liberal banking financier crowd controlled the system. Because again, when you're looking at economics, there's two ways to go about it. There's an open system and a closed system. An open system means you steal from someone else. Okay, so globally, historically, you had the British stealing from, you know, from Indians in India. You had the Spanish Empire stealing from the, you know, South American Indians in Mexico, et cetera, their gold. And then the Americans at the point of a gun, you know, under the name of, you know, bringing democracy to every nook and corner of the planet, stealing whatever wasn't nailed down anywhere and everywhere.
Right.
But because there's nothing else to steal because the system is in a state of collapse and the model based on this infinite growth has come to an end because now it's an entire world under one model, they have to actually produce something. And the liberals, they don't know how to produce. They only know how to steal. It's like a gypsy. The gypsies
true.
Don't know how to make. They say steal. So if you can't steal from your neighbor and you can't steal from the other neighbor and all the neighbors in your neighborhood you've stolen from and they left them penniless, you have to do something because eating your hand is not nutrition. Okay? So that's an open system. That open system is dead. But in a closed system of real economy, okay, money produces money, but it has to move. It has to generate. And that's what Trump was talking about when he was talking about infrastructure. When he's talking, because if you look at American infrastructure, you have, you know, roads in you know, atrocious condition. You have bridges falling down. You have buildings falling down. But because the structures, when you build them over a 2-generation period, you know, thinking 50 years into the future, you have to invest. And that's one of the problems that China has today. Because again, when you look at China, you're looking at two things, capital and people, labor. Labor they have 1.5 billion people, but money is American. And when you start building cities, you know, these phantom cities for millions of people and there's nobody there because they simply don't have the technological development because you have a billion people who are still using a shovel to plant a tree.
Right.
A billion people in China, and if you give them something more sophisticated, you're going to leave half a billion of them unemployed. Now, you may move 20, 30 million Chinese abroad. You already have 100 million Chinese living abroad, the diaspora, and they all pro-China. But you can't move 600 million people. I don't care who you are, under what system you live. So they have a big problem, and that problem is in China, in the United States, in Europe, and everywhere else. If you're going to build a road, and that's what people are saying to me, like, you know, they build a road, it's a toll road, you have to pay money for it. You know, why are they doing this? Because, you know, we've already paid so much money. People don't understand that a kilometer of road, let's say, you know, half a mile, costs about $1 million in upkeep per year. Half a mile is about $1 million in upkeep. Otherwise, it breaks down. Okay? And so if you look at China, there's 100,000 kilometers of roads, which is $100 billion in costs. And because the economy is collapsing, the Chinese market is down 32% this year. And money is American and they're shutting the door. And that's why you have a system where American and China, you know, you're going to have a very violent generation where the Americans are going to go back to the United States to their dollar system, not petrodollar, because petrodollar is a model of their enemies, of Trump's enemies, the liberal banking financiers. And the Chinese are going to China, and they're shutting, again, not that they're shutting the door, it's that they're separating the models. Americans are saying, we're going to stay here, and you go there. And they're meaning China. And China is a two-contour model, meaning you have yuan, their currency, supported by physical gold. And the second contour is digital money. And you need the digital money to write off this $4 quadrillion debt, because you can't write off, you can't make the debt disappear, you know, with physical property, because you have to buy it, because it's physical gold. You have to buy it for something physical, real. But you can't make this, all this stuff disappear. Okay, put this enormous bubble through the electronic money, which is one of the things you have all this stuff being pushed on us, such as Bitcoin and all these other currencies out there, amongst many other reasons. So these are the things that people have to look at. And in this model, Trump is the first person who is interested in pushing the oil to $200 a barrel. And that's something people saying that doesn't make any sense. Why would he do that? Because it destroys the American economy. And we're hearing about this more and more in mainstream American publications. Because the number 200, which I talked about in my book written a year and a half ago, okay, I talked about the $200 price. And there is a reason for it, because again, the situation with Iran, situation with Khashoggi's assassination, any of these, you know, elements can push oil over the top. And that $200 a barrel oil price is going to destroy a liberal banking financier model, thus Trump's enemies. But Trump can't do it himself, because he's going to have the entire world against him. So he's using Iran, because all this rhetoric, you know, fighting wars between Trump and Iran. I personally, as someone who's been in intelligence for 24 years and understand conceptually how things work, I'm going to go out on a limb and explain something that I already explained in my book. I have no doubt believing that Trump and the Iranians worked out a deal, a secret deal. And people are going to say, no, Iranians and Trump are never going to do that. I remind you about Iran-Contra back in 79,
19. Yes.
They got rid of Carter, they brought in Reagan. Okay, and that was the start of Reagan.
The October surprise thing.
The October surprise. It was a big surprise. It wasn't really a surprise, because again, I explain it in the book, not in this one, in my previous book, In the Name of Allah. I want the Iranian students went after the American embassy. They made a mistake. First they walked into the British embassy. And they said to them, you guys are in the wrong embassy. They said, oh, we're sorry. And so they went to the American embassy. But they went to the wrong embassy. The whole thing was staged. But the point is, I have no trouble believing that the Iranians and the Americans worked out a secret deal where Trump is going to use the Iranians. I don't even doubt that he may even lob a couple of tomahawks at them. Okay? For the purpose that the Iranians are going to shut down the Straits of Hormuz. Oil is going to go to $200 a barrel. And Trump is going to use that as a chance to dismantle the liberal banking financier. Parasitical order, because again, these people can only survive. Look at San Francisco. Look at all the parasites there as an example of, you know, of half of America. Yes. These people can only give me, man. They gotta be cheap, man. They want stuff for free.
Yes.
And energy for it to work and to produce money and make money turn in a closed system has to cost, and it has to be minimum $65-$70 a barrel. Not 30 or 35, because the system, the liberal banking parasitical order, they can't survive, okay, if things are expensive. Which means that Trump, by pushing the oil, be it using Khashoggi assassination, using the stuff with Iran, the hostilities in the Middle East, he can use that as a chance to get these third countries to push the oil price to $200 a barrel and dismantle his enemy's liberal banking finance.
Wow. Wow, what a thought. All righty.
Thinking.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. This is Deanna. Our first guest today has been Daniel Estulin. And his website is english.danielestulin.com. He is the author of a must-read book, In the Shadows of a Presidency.
You know, I know we're running out of time. We have probably a couple of minutes. I wanted to touch on this thing with Putin and Trump, another one of these inconsistencies and incongruencies. People are saying that, you know, Trump is crazy. Why is he doing all this stuff? Because on the one hand, he's saying that, you know, Putin is a great guy. He'd like to meet him. And the next day he's putting, you know, these horrible sanctions on him. I want to explain this because, again, people have to understand that Trump is surrounded by traitors. What Trump needs, his short-term objectives are very simple. He needs to survive, not physically, because they won't kill him as they killed JFK, because JFK had no one behind him, and Trump has the entire European aristocracy, the Rothschilds, Vatican, Queen of England, the royal houses, because again, Trump is half Scot, half German, not to mention, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, city-states and city, which is the epicenter of the British Empire. So Trump physically is untouchable. Because to kill somebody, there's no such thing as a lone gunner. It only exists, you know, in conspiracy theory, Hollywood films. In real life, it doesn't exist. For someone to kill someone like Trump, they need permission from very, very high levels. And nobody is going to give permission from high level because the reciprocity is going to be immediate. So Trump is untouchable in that sense. But the whole thing with Putin is he needs to win the midterm elections, which means he has to, you know, stay strong, calm, collective for the next 2 weeks. He doesn't need any surprises. And the stuff we're seeing right now, you know, with the bomber and now with the assassination of, you know, awful thing from this morning in Pittsburgh where eight people were killed, or 8-11, I don't know what the numbers are, in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. I don't know who's behind it. But what we do know, these are the distractions that Trump doesn't need. Because the point is, if he wins midterm, he's going to ease the sanctions on Russia because he wants to work with Putin. He said it, you know, in his campaign in 2016, two nuclear superpowers working together and talking to each other is a good thing. It is a good thing if you know how to add 2 + 2. So the thing is that he needs to have peaceful elections. But for him to do that, he can't afford to be labeled as weak on Russia. So if Congress is pushing, because again, Congress and Senate, he's surrounded by enemies of the United States. These people are not Russian. They're enemies of the United States because of the pro-liberal banking financier global model. And so they're pushing Trump to make a mistake. And they're putting sanctions, forcing Trump's hand, because again, by doing that, he's forced to put additional sanctions against Putin. Okay, because these sanctions, they're a resource. Yes, the stability of the dollar system in this case is falling critically. But Putin's demonization and sanctions obviously is an element of total demonization. They have become the main tool for preparing for elections and organizing the impeachment of Trump. Trump is not going to put sanctions on Putin. You know, he's Putin's stooge. All the stuff that happened in Russia, according to all these other silly books on Donald Trump, they must be true. We got to go after it. Okay? Because again, if you don't demonize Putin, then you have no chance of winning in November and thus no chance of getting rid of Trump. Because the liberal parasites, they're down to their final stripe. Okay, they're down to this final strike. They must win. And winning not only maintaining control of the House, but also winning in the Senate, something I don't think they will get, because I think a third of Senate is up for grabs and most of the seats are Democrats. So I think Trump is going to win both the Senate and the House, which means that if the liberals lose, they're minced meat. And that's what they're doing. They're keeping all this pressure up because the risks are very high. The game is for keeps. So the fight is not only for who will control power, but who will live and who will die. Because again, before you had enough for everybody, now there's not enough. There's only, like in the film The Highlander, there's only enough for one. Okay? And the question, again, is only one question. How to seize control over emissions, meaning money printing, in other words. Because the longer Trump remains president, the stronger those forces that stand behind him are, as well as their hold on power. And Trump, in fact, can lose, but because Trump is not a person, he's a project. When I say he's not a person, I mean he's an extraterrestrial. He is a project of one part of an alternative global elite. Because they can replace Trump with someone else, it doesn't matter. It's a model, it's a project of an alternative model. And Trump and Putin working together can destroy the liberal order. Now, they are not dead, they're fighting for survival, but they still have, you know, a few tricks up their sleeve. One of them, they can still dismantle the global markets. And if you collapse the markets on purpose, who knows what's going to happen? That's still possible. But Trump is winning. American people have to stay strong. they have to understand what's at stake. At stake is not only America's future, it's our future, Russia's future, and it's global future, because Russia is not America's enemy. You know, in the Soviet Union, you had two different models, but now we're part of the liberal banking financier order, and we're hurting. 40% of Russian citizens are dying of hunger. 70% have grave levels of depression. You have over 50% of Russian population living alone. We are not the enemy. We have to work together. We have a common enemy. That enemy is liberal banking financier model, which is coming to the end and is willing to take down the entire world with it, because they know if Trump wins, it's the end for them.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being a guest and your book, The Shadows of a Presidency. Daniel,
Very quickly, my Twitter is @EschulinDaniel. Eschulin Daniel is my Twitter feed.
Okay, great. I will post that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Alrighty. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alrighty. We will be right back.